Good morning. You're listening. Whoops. Let's see if that's better. Yep, that's much better. Good morning. You're listening to Peterborough Currents. My name is Aisha Barmania. Peterborough Currents is a show all about Peterborough, Nogo-Jiwenong, and the Kawarthas. Up till now, we've been primarily a podcast full of interviews and documentaries about local affairs. But for this upcoming season of Trent Radio, we'll see how it goes, but you'll be able to tune in to our live call-in show and variety show now or on Sunday mornings from 10 a.m. to 11:30. The podcast is still going to be full of high-quality documentaries and interviews released monthly, but on the radio, you'll hear longer versions of our documentaries, probably rougher versions of those documentaries, and on the radio, you can also call in. I'll also be joined by live guests. Today, I'm joined by Derek Newman Still, do you want to say?
Hello.
Hello. We'll get into it in a second, what we're going to be talking about today, but I'll just tell a little bit more about what we're doing, Peterborough Currents, and why I'm on the air. So I've lost my co-host for the next little bit for the podcast, and it's mostly going to be me working on the show. But I didn't want to get, you know, penned in by my own, like, biases and limitations for the stories I'm working on. So I'm hoping to get some calls in that can tell by folks who can tell me things that I would never have thought of. So that's kind of why I wanted to do a call-in show, and it's up to you to call in and talk about your experiences, your opinions, and what does it mean for you to live in the Peterborough area, and how do you experience politics in your own life? So every month there's going to be a new theme, and each week we will have a variation on that theme. For September, our theme is LGBTQ Pride, which I'm going to call Queerness in the Kawarthas, so I don't have to keep saying the acronym.
Thanks. Yeah.
So you can call in anytime during the show today. Call in to Trent Radio's main line, 705-741-4011. I've got a volunteer manning the phone. Jeff will take down your information and some notes on your comments. Then later he'll give you a call back to get you on the studio line. But if you find you still can't get through, get in touch with us online. Our email is peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com. But again, the phone number is 705-741-4011. So, as I mentioned, today we're talking about Peterborough Pride.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kind of planned celebration started on Friday, am I right?
That's right, yeah. And there's been a bit of pre-week stuff as well, just individual meetings and things. And I'm really excited to actually really get into Pride Week.
Yeah.
I'm also excited about the possibility that maybe we can even move beyond just Pride Week and have more events for our LGBTQ2IA population, for our queer population here.
Yeah.
And get people really involved in the queer community beyond sort of the way that we're structured by a lot of straight discourse in
right.
the area. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to LGBT Wrath and LGBT Sloth Month as well.
Yes!
Yeah, but for sure, like getting, you know, more events and conversation and like year-round kind of
yeah.
welcoming and pride in the community.
Well, and especially because we need to keep those discourses open. A lot of people think about Pride and they think about it as a big party. And I would say that it's not necessarily always a big party. This is something that came from the Stonewall riot mm-hmm. and from us trying to find our place in the world, trying to speak out against a system that was very focused on erasure and that didn't have a lot of interest in our voices and our experiences. And so there's something inherently political about Pride. Pride is meant to be something that speaks back. It's meant to be sort of an acknowledgement of, and I know I'm being cliche here, but the we're here, we're queer, get used to it.
Yeah. And we were talking a bit in the kitchen about this, and I'm especially wanting to hear folks' stories of their first Pride.
Absolutely.
How things have changed. Or if this is your first Pride, what's your take on it now? Because we were talking about how you came to Peterborough's
yeah.
very first Pride Parade, and there were protesters there.
There were, and I realize I'm dating myself here, but yes, I went to Peterborough's first Pride, and I was just a student at the time, and it was really exciting to to have just moved to the Peterborough community. I moved from Ottawa, mm-hmm. and I was excited about the possibility of finally feeling welcome here in the Peterborough community, particularly since generally during my student experience, I was very femme and very obviously femme. Mm. And so whenever I'd be in the downtown environment, I would have eggs thrown at me and people yelling slurs and people hitting me casually walking down the street. So I thought to myself, like, pride is that way of acknowledging that we have a space here, that we have a sense of belonging in a community where I hadn't been feeling that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And so I showed up really, really excited. I was already kind of worried about what would happen at Pride because I had some understanding of the Peterborough community. Mm-hmm. And there was something just to the experience of showing up and just seeing those signs, seeing people yelling things. I tend to look protesters in the eye. And so looking people in the eye as they were yelling hate discourse at us, it was a really crushing experience. But moving forward, I've lived in the Peterborough community for lots of years. And a couple years ago, I was out at the Whistle Stop downtown having poutine with my friend Stephanie just before Pride, because we were like, oh, we just need to fuel up for the rah, rah, rah excitement. And we had an older man come up to us, and he was like, are you going to the Pride parade? And Stephanie and I sort of looked at each other, and we were like, oh no,
yeah,
this is not going to go well. This is going to be the, because I have problems with, you know, and
I mean, echoes of what happened, you know, when you first came here, I'm sure we're going through your head.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I was like, yeah, I really appreciate the fact that we have Pride in Peterborough. And I was telling this person, like, I'm glad that there's a sense of feeling welcome because we don't always feel welcome in this community. And he kind of looked at us for a couple seconds. Then he was like, he said, I was at the first Pride too.
Right.
And so I looked back and I was like, oh, and he said, I was there protesting.
Yikes.
And so I was getting quite concerned and sort of like getting ready to potentially flag someone if something happened.
Right.
And then he was like, and I just want to say, I'm sorry. Like, I apologize for it. It was a terrible thing for us to do. And he gestured to his friends that kind of came closer as well.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, we feel really ashamed of the way that we made you feel and you know, making you feel like you didn't belong in our community.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're part of our community. You know, you're our friends, you're our families. And it was just sort of one of those moments where all of a sudden I felt like, you know, I was totally tearing up, being like, this is amazing to hear.
Yeah.
And so Stephanie and I continued eating our poutine, and I look over, and like they're working on something, so I didn't really pay much attention. I was like, okay, that was a cool experience, but, you know, food. And suddenly, like, we had realized that the parade was just going by, so we quickly paid and ran out. These gentlemen had left already, but as Stephanie and I were standing on the street, we noticed that they had signs again, and that the signs were saying things like, we're sorry, and, you know, forgive us, and all of this wonderful stuff that was like, you know, apologies have power.
Yeah, yeah. So, what was going through your head when you, I don't know, when you saw them out at the parade, like, reverse protesting almost, you know, like, apologizing for what they'd done, what did you think?
It was just like, all of a sudden I got this flush of hope. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people can change and you know, bigotry can be reversed. That all of our work educating people and all of our work doing things like having Pride and having Pride events, it does something. It changes people. And all of a sudden I got a sense of the, you know, the work that we do can transform, can actually have meaning. And mm-hmm. so since then I've been getting even more involved in Pride and proposing more events because I'm like, these are educational opportunities. I should note here, I teach at Trent University. I'm currently teaching a course on feminist disability studies. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat to have that idea of, we don't just teach in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We teach everywhere we go, and we have those opportunities. And so I view my work as an educator to be partially also about just doing things in the community. Mm-hmm. And when I say education, I don't mean I stand there and lecture at people.
Yeah. No, you do so much. You do all sorts of workshops. You do all sorts of writing,
podcasts.
That, like, all of that, I think, combines to... It teaches people so much about so many different things. Like, I've learned a lot from your writing about, you know, disability, intersectionality of disability and queer identities.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So I also wanted to mention that I'm going to play, coming up later in the show, I'm going to play an interview, an edited interview I did with Tony Tavares, who is organizing, or is one of the committee members for Norwood Pride.
Does he talk about the protests that happened, or do they talk about the protests that happened?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
Okay.
Just so people know, there's been a group from the U.S. that's been going to all of the small local prides.
Really?
With, like, ready-made signs prepared and chanting horrible things at people.
Oh, I didn't know
and,
that.
And this happened at Norwood Pride as well. People...
This year?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I suspect that... And in fact, there's been some indicators that they're probably going to show up to Peterborough Pride this year.
Wow.
And okay. I think it'll just kind of, I think as a community, we can come together and speak back to this, to speak back to, again, the horrible signs. And hopefully we can see another transformation to apologies.
Yeah, I sure hope so. It's interesting because you were talking about the protests at your first and Peterborough's first Pride Parade. And last year was Norwood's first Pride gathering. It wasn't a parade, but it was a Pride gathering. And this year was their second year. And Tony talked very, very well of the fact that, like, seems like it's spreading to more rural communities in Ontario as well. Like, they've been approached by a couple other very small, like, almost villages. Like, Warkworth apparently is having conversations about having their own Pride gathering.
Well, and even so I grew up in a small town called Fenland Falls, and it was a very homophobic environment. It was hellish growing up there.
Right.
This year I got photos from friends that were still in the area of different stores that were actually, like, during Pride Month putting up rainbows, and
wonderful.
And it was so amazing to see that transformation happen in a town where, as a youth, I would have never expected that. So seeing that is kind of heartwarming. We're getting that spreading of this idea of our queer members of community are members of community, that we're not just sort of like members of our own queer community, but part of the spaces that we're in.
Yeah,
we're not being erased as much.
It's wonderful progress.
I
want to come back to that point in just a second. I'll just mention that we're taking calls. So if you want to talk about your first Pride experience, being LGBTQ in this area, you can phone in 705-741-4011. We're also on Twitter, Peterborough Currents, and you can send us an email as well. Again, the phone number, which we're taking live on the air, is 705-741-4011. And my name is Aisha Varmania, and my guest is Derek Newman Still. And Derek, I want to come back to what you were saying about Fenland Falls. What was it like growing up in that environment? And, like, I also am curious to know a bit more about, like, how you came into your queer identity. Like, what was that like, realizing, you know, you were queer in such a homophobic environment?
It was really challenging, especially since queerness was so erased in Fenland Falls. And I should mention again, I'm 40 years old. So when I was growing up, we didn't have access to the internet. Queer portrayals on TV didn't exist, apart from being framed as mental illness or deviancy or like a threat to society. And so growing up, I honestly thought I was mentally ill and tried to keep my queerness secret for the longest time. I got involved in a lot of different church groups as well because friends of mine were involved in them. And I thought to myself, okay, this is a space where, you know, I can heal. But they never really fit. Nothing really fit in terms of identity. Mm. And weirdly enough, it wasn't until I moved away from Fenland Falls. My mother and I escaped my biological father, who was abusive. And we finally moved to the Peterborough area when I was about 16. 16. And I was still kind of feeling the same sort of like I didn't wasn't aware of queer representation, and I thought there was just something wrong with me.
Right.
And then it was in a social studies course. One of my teachers at TAS showed a video that was about an older man coming out to his family, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, there's language for what I am.
There's other people like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was really fascinating to get that sense of I exist, and it's not a pathology. It's not something that can be like done away with. And it really meant a lot to actually see this happen. Mm. And like before that, I'd only encountered the words gay and mostly actually the words faggot in Fenland Falls through insults. And so it was neat to all of a sudden see that transformation. And so in my time in Peterborough, that was sort of my acknowledgement. I came out to my mom, but didn't talk to anyone else about it. And it wasn't until the next year we moved to Ottawa, I started connecting with the queer community, and particularly started actualizing the word queer. This was sort of during the era of a lot of focus on this notion of queer nationalism, this idea that come together as a nation of queer folk around the world and create our own space of belonging. Because belonging is something that we're often denied. Yeah. At the time, like there was no ability for us to get married as queer folk. Yeah. There was no sort of acknowledgement of our rights or protections. Even when I was in the Ottawa area, I had people attack me, and even in work situations, like I had someone who was consistently attacking me, throwing beer bottles at my head on the way into work, which again, this guy was drunk at work,
right?
And then threatening to kill me throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And I went to HR and they were like, well, just tell him you're not gay. And I was like, but I am.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, just, pretend you're not. That was their solution for homophobic incidents.
Yeah.
But I was able to get this sense of a community of queer folks. So I started using the term queer, particularly since there was something really beautiful about the Ottawa community because of the sort of like political environment. And I know it, like when I've been in Toronto environment, there's huge separations between like the gay population, the lesbian population, the trans population, mm-hmm. the non-binary population. There's a lot of sort of silos of queer identities. Mm. But in Ottawa, there was a sense of coming together. And I really enjoyed that sense of we're all queer.
Right.
And it's something I've noticed here in Peterborough, too. Like, when I came back to Peterborough, and when I was about 18, to go to Trent University, I started to get that sense of, because we're such a small community, there's opportunities for a really powerful form of pride, where we don't separate ourselves out, where, because we're a smaller community of queer folk, there's this notion that we can actually communicate, and we don't have to be, the gays, the lesbians, etc. Mm-hmm. We can actually come together and be queer together. And I've really enjoyed that experience of being here in Peterborough. And I notice the difference when I go into the village in Toronto, because all of a sudden you get these divisions that just feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for, to have my lesbian siblings, my trans siblings, my NB siblings, to have that sense of community here.
It's really interesting, because I've been seeing some conversations and, feeling things myself about how Pride in Toronto doesn't feel as, all-encompassing of queer identities. You go, and even if you just think of, like, Pride Parade, you kind of conjure up images of, like, scantily clad, gay men, gay white men, generally.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't feel as all-encompassing. It was when I think of Peterborough Pride, you think of all sorts of folks marching. I was just wondering, how would you define queer? And, like, what is the importance of that kind of all-encompassing identity in terms of, like, the, like, a kind of clash with, heteronormativism?
I think it's... sorry, that's a really great question, because for me, queer is always fluid. And that's what I like about it, that it can start to encompass different identities, that it brings in different identities. And I've talked to folks about this in terms of the coming out experience, because in our cultural dialogues, we think of coming out, and we're presented with this image of coming out as a one-time only situation. Someone says, I'm gay, because it's generally always a white straight, or sorry, not white straight, a white cis male character who then comes out and is embraced by the community and then transformed through that. And then they live their life under that identity. But coming out is never that simple. It's never a once-off experience. It's rarely celebrated. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant reminder. I know folks in my community that have had to come out to the same person multiple times because the degree of erasure is such that they'll say, like, I'm non-binary, and then immediately, you know, family members will keep on referring to them using the same identity. Mm-hmm. Even folks will say, we'll come home with partners, and people will be like, oh, is this your friend?
Yeah.
No, yeah. We're having sex. Mm-hmm. and this is kind of ignored. So that coming out experience is constant. and we come out using different experiences as well. Like sometimes our identities become fluid. There's often a kind of fluidity and movement around mm-hmm. this idea of gender and sexuality mm-hmm. that happens. And I think that encompasses queerness too, because we're constantly going through that process of coming out, of shifting identities, of figuring out how we understand ourselves. Queer itself is a title that constantly changes, mm-hmm. shifts, and encompasses new identities and new experiences. And it's still something that's in flux. And I love the fact that it's in flux.
Yeah.
That it doesn't just, you know, back in the day, include just gay, lesbian, bisexual, maybe trans, mm-hmm. but is instead encompassing identities of intersex people, mm-hmm. Of non-binary people, of actually, you know, including trans folks, mm-hmm. And also including two-spirited folks as well, who traditionally have been kind of shoved into adjacent categories in a lot of discourse because of the sort of the whiteness of queerness in our cultural representations, mm-hmm. And the colonial attitudes of queerness in our representations. And so I think that kind of interweaving is so important, and I think it's something that changes too. And it's particularly something that is hopefully changing in terms of cultural encounters as well, because of there's a lot of different identities that I would consider queer, although again, I don't want to apply labels to other folks, but folks like hetras, for example, this mm-hmm. is in India, this is a gender. And so we have these identities out in the world that I think of as queer, but who may not themselves use that title. Mm-hmm. So I like that fluidity to be able to take in new identities. But ultimately, for me, queer exists as a way of speaking back to a culture that normativizes a heterosexual identity and a cisgendered identity, and pretends that our categories don't exist.
Right. And I think it's really interesting to look back at the history of, you know, queer, because it used to be a slur, right?
And
it,
absolutely.
I was never, like, I wasn't really alive when queer was used as a slur in this way. It seems like it's been pretty well reclaimed by the time I started being conscious of issues and queer community, and the queer community. But my understanding of it is that it used to be encompassing of, you know, all sorts of different, like, I can't absolutely place you, I don't care whether you're gay or trans, you're just weird to me.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think of it as, like, this kind of orientation to, like, a kind of normal, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just a catch-all for people under, you know, the acronym, but it's also this way of orienting yourself to normative society.
Absolutely. And I often describe the great thing about queer is that contained in the word is a shout, right? It's a way of speaking back. And it's not a way of speaking back in a way that makes people feel good about themselves. It's a way of speaking back to remember our history, remember our current status. You know, as a as a queer group, we are still under threat. We are still considered socially a slur just by existing. And so reclaiming the word queer and using queer has power. And it I think it's really transformative to be able to say, like, look, we took something that was used to attack us, and now it's ours.
Yeah.
And I love the experiences of, again, I'm old. I've had people yell queer at me, and there's some power to being like, and it just the look that they give you after you use their word, because they want some kind of reaction, and it's great to be able to look at them look them in the eye as they're yelling something and say, yeah, that's me. The same thing happens, I should mention, I'm disabled, and so I have had people yell cripple at me before, and things like this, and I just look at them and I'm like, yes, I'm a cripple, that is correct, good observation.
Yeah.
And they just don't know what to say, right? And so I think it's so important, for me at least, that reclaiming of language. And so I describe myself frequently as a queer crip, because I'm like, I'm taking cripple back. I want this to exist. And a lot of people in the disabled community have done the same thing. And we're really indebted to the queer community for that reclaiming of language and sort of like replaying of language, and the same to feminist discourse, because a lot of feminist discourse has been like, you know what, I'm going to claim the word bitch and I'm going to use that. And I love things like Bitch Media for that. Like, screw it. This is our word now. You can call me that, but I can call myself that, and it becomes so much more powerful.
I feel like that really comes down to what we're talking about, like pride, like queer pride, and you know, the kind of radical statement of saying, I am proud of, you know, who I am, even though you would use it as an insult against me.
Yeah.
I'll just give a plug for, we're taking phone calls today. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, and my guest is Derek Newman Still.
Hello.
We're talking about pride, queer pride, and what's it like to be queer in the Kawarthas, as well as we want to hear from allies, people who are maybe feeling some growing pains about, you know, this kind of growing acceptance. Are you queer and living in Peterborough? What have your experiences been? And what do you think the community could be doing better? Do you feel like the Peterborough Pride celebrations this week reflect your identity and your experiences? Call in 705-741-4011. Are you an ally to queer folk? What does it mean for you to support the community? And how do you use your influence to make Peterborough a safe place? Maybe you're feeling some growing pains about accepting queer identities. Maybe this is all new and kind of rough on you, but like, what's on your mind and how do you understand queer pride? And maybe what do you misunderstand? We could probably field some of those questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So call in 705-741-4011. Well, it's 10:30, so why don't we listen to the rough cut documentary of my interview with Tony Tavares of Norwood Pride.
That would
and then
be fabulous.
We can come back and talk a bit more about pride in rural communities. So again, the phone number is 705-741-4011. And right now, we're going to hear from an edited interview that I did with Tony Tavares. So he is one of the committee members for Norwood Pride, and if you've driven along Highway 7 up to Ottawa, you've probably driven through Norwood. It's kind of blink and you'll miss it. It takes probably like 30 seconds to go through it. But this tiny, tiny community came together last year to have their first Pride gathering. And they had it again this year. And when they first started organizing, they got a lot of support from Peterborough Pride, who showed up at their event and gave them some support emotionally and, you know, on a substantial organizing level. And this year, Norwood Pride is going to be marching in the Peterborough Parade. And I just spoke to Tony Tavares a bit about that, and we're going to listen to more of that conversation that I did with him. You can call in while the interview is playing. The phone number is 705-741-4011. And here is Tony Tavares of Norwood Pride.
Yeah, I'm Tony Tavares, a committee member for Norwood Pride. My first Pride was in the late 80s, I think. And I remember going and thinking, wow, this is amazing. There's 40,000 people here. It was over the top. We'd never seen anything like it down at Church in Wellesley in the Village. Of course, I was much younger then, and just to be out and having fun and to see such a celebratory energy around the queer community, because in the 70s and 80s, we grew up with, I mean, it still exists, but back then there was so much negative bias and you grew up feeling very, very alone and isolated. I'm sure some people still do, but it was the norm back then, right? Certainly people weren't coming out in high school and having, you know, queer collectives in high school. So to be around like-minded people and feel supported and feel just the celebration and the joy, it was really affirming, really supportive. It was so necessary. When we first moved to this community, we realized that there were other queer people around and got to know some of them. And once, I believe it was up at our cottage, we were sitting around the coffee table and jokingly almost said, we should have a Norwood Pride. Wouldn't that be a riot? And it turned into an event. We talked to some friends of ours, straight friends actually, and before we knew it, the Legion was booked on a Sunday in July last year, and a bunch of people came together with a lot of goodwill and no budget, and put together this event. We invited the mayor. We decided we wanted to make it very family friendly and inclusive, and build bridges with the community and increase visibility here, and it turned into this amazing, successful event that now has become an annual thing for Norwood. A lot of the people, certainly local people who grew up here that were gay and lesbian, existed, and some of them had struggled along the way, you know, over the years. A lot of them were older people. But a lot of the people we met were actually people who had come to Norwood. A lot of people who left the city or other bigger areas and decided to move to the country and ended up here. And so you kind of find your tribe, right? And it happens that some of the holistic people, which is my professional, inclination, were also queer people, so it was a really good blend, and I did find a sense of community here, but it was sort of just a bunch of people who knew each other that got together occasionally. There's no organized community here. And part of that really motivated the initial idea for Pride. Cause the main thing we wanted to do is after the big joke of we should have a Norwood Pride, ha ha ha, and then it came to be, we realized how important that might be for a teenager who's in a rural community. And despite all the information on TV and on the internet and the visibility and that's available right now, when in a small community where there are no resources, I would imagine it could still feel very isolating and all of the mental health issues that can come with that sense of isolation and feeling different, you know, and the statistics around higher suicide rates and just all of that became so important as part of our motivation to increase visibility in a small community. And also for the parents, because with limited resources and limited visibility, parents might struggle when their kids come out. So it would be a win-win for everybody if it was just, look at these people and they're just having fun and they're part of your community. And the thing about a place like Norwood, these small rural communities, is that everybody does know you. I have a business here on Main Street. My partner is a teacher in the community. He grew up in the area. So you walk down the street and you know half of the people you go by. And so all of that increased visibility was part of what sort of, I don't even want to say normalizes it, but just kind of realizes that whatever biases people grew up with may not be true necessarily. And so initially we had that motivation, the motivation that there might be some kid out there. If there's one kid that may not even come, but sees the posters and realize this happened, and it may have been a conversation around the dinner table at their home, that doesn't consider committing suicide or doesn't, you know, feel so incredibly isolated and alone that they end up going through high school in this severe depression or with anxiety or social isolation, right? And all of its issues. We didn't really have any expectations of the first Pride last year because we had no idea. It was uncharted territory, really. And so what we got this gorgeous day. It was this perfect weather and it was sunny and we had done some postering. And because, I guess, of the postering and a bit of a buzz around the area, we got some media exposure. And it was held at the Legion, so they had a cash bar there. And they did some, like, burgers on the barbecue. And we had a kids' table, and we thought, well, let's just see what happens. And people just started arriving, And in this small, relatively small patio area of the Legion, we had probably around 300 people, which was phenomenal for a town this size, right? And the most important thing wasn't even so much the size of the crowd. It's the diversity of the crowd. There were kids there. There was an activity table. There were families there. There were cottagers who read about it that showed up. And all the neighboring communities. We had people here from Peterborough and from Warsaw and from Hastings and from Warkworth and just you name it. And the sense of just celebration and joy that was there was... incredible. It was incredible. It was moving. It was affirming. It was lovely. And we realized that despite the fact that there's so much acceptance and so many people from the community that said, thank God you're doing this, whether they showed up or not, like non-queer people, I mean, that there also is maybe people that are challenged by the idea that something like this is happening. Like they certainly haven't made themselves known to us. We didn't feel any resistance or anybody coming in directly approaching us anyway about being uncomfortable with this. But I think that a sensitivity to the fact that, building bridges can be a process and often because oppression has been so long and the gains have been so slow, that a lot of the times we want to move in and be in your face about it. And I think there's a time and a place for that. Absolutely. But finding the most skillful way to build visibility and acceptance and educate people really is important too. And there was a sense that a parade might be challenging for some people, and that might have been only our own opinions. We never got any feedback to that extent, but we just put it out there. The first year is a success. We've had the second one. It's a success. I'm sure that it'll grow from here, and perhaps there might be something like a parade in the future. So part of it was logistics, and part of it was really trying to be sensitive to the entire community, because if we want to be inclusive, then we have to consider being inclusive to people who potentially may be challenged by this. We're not going to be changing minds by creating more hard lines and divisions. So I don't know. I'm thinking there may be varying opinions about that, but that's kind of where I see it.
So that was an interview, an edited interview with Tony Taveras of Norwood Pride. Derek, you grew up in a rural community, and yeah. And Tony was talking about how they've been able to kind of create this positive environment in Norwood. What do you think of this kind of growing trend of more rural pride events happening?
Well, I remember when I first had someone sent me info about Norwood Pride, and I was like, oh, what? It can't be Norwood. It can't be here.
Right.
And so I was really, really surprised about it. And then I had this sense of hope, because seeing things happen in smaller communities really matter. You know, in terms of our population, again, Canada is fairly urban. A lot of our population tends to be city-based. Mm-hmm. But having grown up in a rural space, I grew up in Fenland Falls, it really makes a difference to see that all of a sudden these environments that I always dreamed of in this utopian imagination would eventually become accepting. And then seeing this happen in a community like Norwood, and even seeing, like this year, there was a Kawartha Lakes Pride that happened in Lindsay as well. Lindsay was right near where I grew up. It was the the big city near Fenland Falls. And so seeing these kinds of transformations just give me a lot of hope that our population dynamics are not... are shifting, and also are not the way that we socially imagine them. So much of our, especially our representations of queerness, especially rural queerness, is I grew up in this town, I ran away to the city, now I feel at home. And so there's something about this idea of some of us stay.
Yeah.
Not all of us need to go to the village.
Right.
Some of us decide that our best role is out on... is out in the community, is being able to be present in these smaller spaces and be a voice of queerness, to say that queerness is not an urban thing, that in fact this is a community-wide thing, a thing that exists in all of our communities.
Right. And I had this moment, like when I was working on this episode, where I felt like I was only talking to folks who had moved here from Toronto or bigger cities, and I had this like crisis of like, oh my God, what if there aren't any, you know, people who grew up here and stayed? But I think it's interesting how there's been this kind of, you know, Peterborough is this interesting area where we have a lot of folks who, like, I moved here from Toronto to go to university, and I think there's a lot of folks who move here to go to university or to, you know, get a different kind of lifestyle. Like Tony mentioned, folks moved to Norwood to escape the rat race. He's from Toronto.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's kind of this interesting blend of, you know, folks from away and folks from here.
Yeah. Well, and we're very often also, because that cultural dialogue of queerness is a city thing, I find that even like regularly people will tell me like, you wouldn't understand this. You're a city person.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm from Fenland Falls. Like,
right.
I'm from outside of Fenland Falls.
Right.
I'm from this place called Hickory Beach, which does sound like it's from some sort of Stephen King novel of scary little community. And it's accurate.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see that constant having to remind people I'm actually from a rural space.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do critiques of environments, people will often say like, well, you know, people don't know any better when they're from. And I'm like, that's not an excuse. No matter what community you're from, it's privilege to be able to say, I didn't know and I don't know about queer folks. So I still use, you know, queerphobic language. And I'm like, you know, there are many of us that came from these communities. My family, same, came from this community and like learned the language and constantly are learning the language and are learning ways of understanding other people that they wouldn't have encountered, or at least who would have been secretively encountering in Fenland Falls.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this kind of visibility from Pride events in smaller communities is helping those kinds of conversations move forward?
Absolutely, because I think especially framing it within that idea of pride matters, right? Visibility of queerness, we've always been visible. We've always been nonconforming. I'm super femme, so like growing up in a small community, people recognize that and would yell slurs about that, especially in cases where in Fenland Falls, the thing you did was hockey.
Mm, right.
My mom recently told me about some of my first like hockey experiences, and apparently I was a very fast skater. I was also super short. And I would always be the first person to the puck. But I would, I didn't want to play hockey. I hated it. And so I would be the first person to the puck, but I would pirouette around it and skate away. It was the ultimate sort of like, you know, screw you. I want to do figure skating. That's what I always wanted.
Yeah. If you make me exist in this kind of space, I'm going to use this space how I want.
Absolutely.
Neat.
And so we've always been visible, but reframing that visibility and saying, like, this isn't a dirty secret, that this is, in fact, something to celebrate. It makes a difference. I did want to bring this back to you. You had mentioned earlier what about queer Roth and queer Sloth?
Yeah.
And I love that meme. Like, that was so exciting to see this year, that sense of like, okay, so we can have a month of pride and celebrate, but what about the month of wrath, where we actually yell back at society and say, you know what, we're pissed, we're angry queers, we're tired of being erased. And so I think we need both of those in terms of our cultural dialogues, in smaller communities especially, to be like, we're proud of being queer. But we're not going to also tolerate and silently sit by while queerphobic things are happening.
I just want to mention again that we're taking calls. I haven't had any yet, but I'm hopeful. So if you have a story about being queer in the Kawarthas, being an ally, learning about these things, please call in to share your stories, 705-741-4011. And my name's Aisha Barmania. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF. And my guest today is Derek Newman Still, and we're talking about all things LGBTQ, pride, and living in the area.
Yeah.
Derek, a lot of your, you mentioned earlier that you are disabled and you kind of identify with this kind of crip queer. Could you talk a bit about that? What is that, and why is it important to you?
I think it's especially important in terms of our queer population, because frequently within queer communities, there's an erasure of disability. And part of that, again, it sounds like I'm picking on the village, but there's issues with the village in terms of accessibility.
The village in Toronto.
Yes, sorry, I should have said.
No worries.
Sorry, I'm very sort of like in Peterborough, the reference to the village, people are like, oh yeah, Toronto.
Yeah.
But there is a sort of like, there's an erasure of disability there. There's and that's part of the, especially the gay male experience, is this idea of bodily hegemonies, bodily norms, and the body that's constructed is partially constructed through like film representations, through television, and through the visibility of bodies in our community. There's a hyper ability being portrayed through masculinity in the queer community, particularly in terms of this idea of your body needs to be muscly.
Right.
Slim.
Right.
There's a massive fat phobia within the queer community, and that's partially because of the bodily controls that are placed on our bodies as well. I'm going to diverge and be tangential for a bit, for a lot of trans folks, often during, especially for folks who want to have surgical changes to their bodies, they're often told, the first thing by doctors that they're told is lose weight.
Right.
And so there's these aspects of control that are placed on trans bodies. But in terms of our community in general, there's also this idea of you should be able to be active, quote unquote. And what that largely means is able-bodied. Mm. And so there's sort of a fetishization of disability, like, oh, kinky, you know?
Right.
But we're not there to be people's kinks. We're there to be part of the community. We're there as fully realized human beings, and we exist at that intersection of these two identities that are sort of structured as non-normate in our society, that are positioned as being outside of the norms and beyond the norms and problematic. And so I've often thought, like, when I first started encountering the disabled community, the queer community as a disabled person, I was like, oh, I'll really encounter the kind of acceptance of difference. Mm. And that wasn't really the case. There's a lot of strong kind of controls placed around disabled bodies. And those continue to be the case. Even a couple of weeks ago, I was at an event in Toronto. I don't want to mention the event because it's not the event organizer's issue, but people were constantly talking about how great and inclusive this event was. And then the social environment was problematic. I walk with a type of walker called a rollator. I actually had people shoving it out of the way while I was using it, which meant I ended up in in severe pain for a week.
Right.
But I was viewed as an impediment, something in the way of regular queerness.
Right.
And so there's an aspect of this ableism, this structure of us as in the way, mm-hmm. rather than part of this community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something really important that I've been working on reflecting against and responding to. And the same with a lot of other folk. We've actually got a panel coming up on the Friday of Pride on the topic of queering disability and disabling queerness because of this. Because I was talking to friends and colleagues and students about this. One of my students, Tessa, does a lot of work around the Peterborough community in terms of this idea of access.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were in a conversation about the need for queerness and disability to come together. And the two of us kind of came up with this idea of having a panel on that topic. And so we've got folks coming in who are queer and disabled to talk about that experience. And it's on the Friday of Pride Week, which is September 21st.
Right. I think it's interesting. You know, like a lot of this kind of queer or disabled activism, it's like the same kind of stuff you would be advocating for in non-queer environments as well. You know, you don't want people to shove your rollator when you're at the grocery store or anywhere else. Why focus on advocating in the queer community for more, you know, accessibility?
It's just one flavor of the activism.
Yeah.
I do a lot of different disability activism around Peterborough because it's a community that pretends that it's accessible by having a couple of key features but isn't, right? Even in terms of something as simple as curb cuts.
Right.
Downtown, you have curb cuts at most of these sort of meetings of different streets.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of downtown, the curb cuts are often around the corner.
Right.
And so you have to walk out into traffic to then get to the corner to cross the road.
Mm-hmm.
And in Peterborough, people drive right up to the edge. So often, in order for me to use the curb cuts, I frequently have people beeping at me and yelling threats and things, right, from cars. So our community is not accessible.
And that's all when there's no snow on the ground too, right?
Yeah, as soon as snow arrives. Yeah. And there's an assumption here that the disabled people just live in our houses and never go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important for our presences to be visible and to be out there as well, so that we don't just sort of like disappear.
Yeah, so you mentioned it's the kind of this one flavor of your activism.
Yeah.
So it's like it's about, you know, so many different things. It's about the curb cuts so you can access the city. It's about having more mindfulness of like queer folk in these queer events so that you feel welcome in all of them.
Yeah.
Is there a fairly, you know, what's the community like for people who are in Peterborough and queer and disabled?
It's transforming.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's been a lot of work by different activists to get us to this point as well over time. And particularly a lot of disabled artists have, mm-hmm, been really transformative. I'm thinking about in particular the work of Jess Sash, who lived in the Peterborough community for a long time and did things like, you know, public art exhibits where, at one point, they actually put, sort of the police warning signs around buildings that weren't accessible to be like, this is an inaccessible environment. You can't go in here. Just to remind like the able-bodied community that there are barriers everywhere, that we're being constantly told as a disabled community, you don't belong. And so I think largely the reason why I bring up Jess Sash is that they actually spoke back to a system and in a way that was like shouting back to say, no, we're not going to do this anymore. Whereas so many folks in the Peterborough community are like, if I just talk quietly, eventually something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really powerful to have a response that says, this is an emergency.
Yeah.
This isn't something that we can hope for in the future. This is something we need to push for.
Right.
But I think about a lot of potential within the community as well. I was at the shop downtown, You're Welcome, which is the new sort of like space. It's a kind of
sex shop
slash cool queer stuff shop.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I loved it in there. First of all, because I could get in.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, because I could actually navigate the store without being mashed into a tiny spot.
Right.
They have wide spaces, and they're actually interested in sort of like disabled bodies and sex,
mm-hmm.
and reminding people that, you know, disabled bodies have sex.
Right.
as well as providing resources for us. And so it was really exciting to actually see folks like shop owners who are thinking to themselves, like, how do we make this space accessible?
Yeah. Do you think there's an aspect of drawing on the success and size of the LGBTQ community to use... I don't know, like to get the community at large on side and lead a larger push? Is there anything to that?
Well, and absolutely. I see a lot of, as you mentioned, those intersections between disability and queerness are so strong, mm. right? This sort of like speaking back to the community, the history of activism. And a lot of folks in disability rights activism are drawing on the history of queer protests, not just queer protests, because also, again, drawing on the history of organizations like Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. and speaking back to a system that others certain bodies, mm-hmm. and cast people as social and physical problems. And so I think there's a lot that the disabled community is learning from other communities in terms of how we can make our presence visible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited about some possibilities in terms of disarts as well, disabled artists and disabled artworks, because there's a growing interest in this area in Peterborough, and there are places that are now really interested in like bring your work in, because we want to see, mm-hmm. what's happening in terms of our disabled community. We want to actually not erase you and see you speak through art. So I'm really excited to see some of the dis arts happening in the community, and I think that's something we can really kind of push. So I love that intersection of disability and queerness, because there's so much potential,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much cross-pollination that can happen.
Yeah, wonderful. I just want to mention that I think we're having a problem with the phone line, so if you're trying to get through, we are trying to figure out a solution, but we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, if you want to share your thoughts with us, you can send us an email, peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com, or tweet us at PTBO_currents. That's on Twitter. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio, 92.7 CFFF FM. My name's Aisha Barmania, and my guest is Derek Newman Still, a scholar, activist, artist, writer, member of the queer community, member of the disabled community in Peterborough.
I wear lots of hats.
Yes.
also literally, because my hair is falling out.
You do usually have a very nice hat on. I just want to pick up on something that we mentioned that you were talking about a bit earlier about... maybe our phone troubles are solved. We'll see. Is there someone on the line, Jeff? No, there's no one on the line. Okay, never mind. So you were talking a bit about, bodies at Pride and who we see, and it's usually a very able-bodied, usually very fit, kind of oiled up young man type thing.
I love that too, the oiled up part, because I love that because it's great to look at, but also because that is the look, right? Like and I think it reemphasizes the muscular image, uh-huh. And the hyper masculine image as well,
right? And I feel like it comes down to this almost like hypersexuality, like the queer community is hypersexualized in so many ways. Like when you come out, often the questions are about
sex,
and as a trans person, often the conversation is about your genitals, or like what's in your pants, and like that's a super inappropriate question, and it comes from this kind of hypersexualization of the queer community.
Yeah.
How does being disabled play into that? Because from my own reading, like the disabled community is like under-sexualized.
That's right.
We have someone on the line, but I'll just give you a chance to respond to what
I think
you said.
That's a really great point, because there is a hyper-sexualization of the queer community and this assumption that we are queer just because we like to have sex,
mm-hmm.
And that our identity can be reflected in queerness, which erases the ace community as well, the asexual community.
Right.
And yet with disability, there's an assumption of of unsexualization, of desexualization, and that somehow we are not a sexual population. And so being able to actually remind people that we do have, we can be sexy and crip, I think is really important. So there's a kind of a beauty to that intersection because of the intervening social ideas around queerness.
Right.
And one of the things that happens is interesting too, again, the cross-pollination, because much like with trans folks, when asked, like, you know, what's in your pants, mm-hmm. Disabled people, we frequently get asked, does it work?
Right.
And so I've had total strangers point at my, like, genital regions and ask, does it work?
Mm-hmm.
Because of that assumption that, that again, first of all, it's everyone's ability in the rights of the larger community to ask about our genitals and our private bodies. I actually had someone ask yesterday why I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
And when I told them it was none of their business, they got enraged with this idea, because there's an assumption that our queer bodies and our disabled bodies should be open.
Yeah.
And should be discussed with strangers.
Right. There's this demanding openness and like demand for education and knowledge.
Yeah.
We do have a caller on the line. Let's see if this worked. George, are you there?
I sure am.
Wonderful. Okay, I'm just going to bring up your volume a bit more. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Oh, gosh. Well, hi to Derek. I know Derek from Trent back in the day.
Hello.
Hey. I'm a middle-aged guy sitting on my porch, ready to talk to you.
Excellent.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. You and I spoke a bit more to, you know, peek behind the curtain. This is a seated caller. George, you were talking to me earlier this week or last week, whenever it was, about how you've seen, like, your kids growing up with this kind of awareness of queer issues. Could you talk a bit about, like, why that's so remarkable to you?
Oh, it's one of the one of the only progressive changes over the decades that really stands out. I come from South Oshawa. I was raised in a binary, a very homophobic binary back in the day. It, you know, still unlearning, but binaries are in my brain. It's really hard to shake. I met a colleague in the late 90s, and they transitioned just after I met them. And years and years, like decades later, I still go to the pronoun she in my head. I don't want to, but I'm so stuck in the damn binary. It's so hard to unlearn. And I'm absolutely embracing the unlearning, and I'm on side. But my kids, no problem. They're teenagers. I ask them, what's the difference between pan and bi? And they tell me without blinking an eye. I mean, they roll their eyes because I'm old and I don't get it, but they get it. I mean, they've also gone to a nice privileged French immersion bubble where, you know, the kids are, you know, they're from privilege. I'm not sure every school has this kind of thing, but I'm absolutely amazed and in awe about how they're fine with the fluidity. They're fine with their classmate who changes their gender every day and wears a button with a different gender. And it took me a while to think, yeah, what the hell? I'm not going to get stuck on authenticity. I mean, people explore play, not play in a profound, radical play.
Yeah,
that's fine by me. But it sometimes takes me a little while to get it. But my kids get it immediately.
Do you wish you'd had this kind of exposure when you were a kid and growing up?
Well, of course, but it was a different time. It was it was nasty. I mean, you know, you go back 100 years, it gets even nastier.
Well, and I'm thinking about, I think you're talking about something really important right now, George, because, again, as we know, the Ontario sex ed curriculum for youth has just been reset to the 1998 curriculum, And I'm worried about the effect that that has, because it's great to hear that, you know, your kids are able to understand these kind of non-binary identities and sexualities. And I think about that kind of the fact that we have a potential here for an inclusive society, and then the danger of that being gone, of losing that as sort of we reset the curriculum to a time mm-hmm. before the internet, mm-hmm. or I shouldn't say before the internet because it existed, but before there were discussions like this, before there was texting, before yeah. there was a lot of online forums around gender and sexuality.
But what I find interesting and hopeful about this horror show, Derek, is there's nothing more conservative than a school board.
Absolutely.
And this school board and many others have come out publicly against that.
Yeah.
Not just teachers here and there or superintendents, but they have publicly come out against it. And teachers have received guidance from this conservative, hierarchical, old yeah. school board saying, look, you can talk about X because it's in the old curriculum. They have a detailed, not exactly a cheat sheet, but the damn system sent out a way. Here, you can talk about it here, here, and here. And next week, school kids are going out and boycotting their classes. They're going to have a walkout protesting
yeah.
Doug Ford's
so
decision.
Exciting.
So, I don't mean to, you know me, I'm not a Pollyanna, but the fact that these sort of students and school boards are fighting against it shows just how much mainstream support there is, as opposed to like this freak show of Doug Ford
yeah.
Hypocritically somehow wedging this bizarre crap down on us.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because I think back to when I was in high school, and that was probably 10 years ago now, but at the time there was still like a lot of discussion of, you know, queer issues, and for me, going from like, it wasn't totally conservative, but like I hadn't had that much exposure to like trans issues, but it took a couple times for me to like hear about, you know, non-binary identities, gender fluidity, for me to really start accepting it. Like my first initial reaction was, oh, that's weird. And like even as someone who identifies as that now,
yeah.
The gut reaction is, no, that's weird. I've never heard of that before. But I think the more you start bringing it up, and especially the younger you can bring it up, like if you're the younger you are when it gets brought up, I think the more acceptance you might have for it. So this change to the curriculum, I think, doesn't have the best interests for folks at heart,
no.
to educate themselves and learn more about it. And then you come, and without it, you'll just come to the realization as an adult, which is still worth doing. But, you know, I think it's better off for people to learn earlier what the options are, even for themselves.
Especially since so frequently we don't encounter these images. And like I said earlier about my experiences growing up in a small town, and that encounter with disability, with queerness as being just a pathology, that there is something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And like it took years to kind of discover, like there are options out there, there are identities out there that fit. And I think this curriculum is just ignoring the possibility of those identities, because mm-hmm. ultimately it thinks that they don't exist until someone mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
There's still this sort of view of like, you can catch queerness from hearing about it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's totally wrong, because like,
then we can actually know about it, right?
Yeah, I think knowing about it leads to some sort of self-reflection, you know,
yeah.
and maybe you decide that queerness is for you.
Yeah.
Maybe you are queer.
Well, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask George, like having learned more about this, like through your kids, mm-hmm. has it made you reflect on your own kind of identities?
Oh, jeez. What it's made me reflect on is learning and unlearning.
Yeah.
Like you spoke a moment ago about when you first encountered queer and some trans issues, you thought, "Oh, that's weird," and I certainly thought, "Oh, that's weird." This is what we were taught to learn,
mm-hmm.
to perceive, and my kids are taught different
yeah.
things culturally through their peers, through the school. So you're absolutely right that if schools don't talk about this, it's it's not good, because when you talk about it, somebody's 5, 6, 7, you talk in an age-appropriate way, but mm-hmm. you don't pathologize it. It's just, hey, here's a possibility. Yeah, people do this. Look, this is in the world. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you grow up thinking, yeah, this is in the world. And that's a radical thing, as opposed to, look at that. That's goddamn weird.
Yeah.
So.
But I even reflect on, this is probably... again, reflecting on the learning experiences of also family members, but when there's a 15-year gap between myself and my younger brother, and my partner and I were going to get married, I talked to my mom about, like, you know, my little brother needs to know. He needs to know what's going on. He was just a little guy then, and she was like, well, you can't talk to kids about sex. And that's the first assumption often, that talking about queerness means talking about sex.
Right.
And it's like, well, when you talk about straight folks getting married, do you say they got married because they really like to do it?
Yeah.
No, you talk about they're in love. They're coming together out of love. And so that reframing was so important. Like my mom was like, oh my God, you're right. And but it's so stuck in our brains that queerness means sex. Everything else means love.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, being able to have kids educated about this possibility doesn't involve talking about sex, or at least it doesn't have to. It's about identities, mm-hmm. right? It's about the way that we interact with the world.
Yeah. George, are you going to any Pride events?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Why do you think it's important for you to get out there and be at these events?
Well, when you speak of education and the opportunity to have things on the horizon, like, oh, here's A, B, C, and then there's this too, by supporting Pride, going out, it's an embrace of different ways of being, and it's what I can do as an ally to... I remember I was out like 14, 15 years ago at one of the first Prides with my kids in Peterborough, and there were like a couple dozen people looking nervous, and it's a very, very different scene today. And I can put on a cynical hat and think, geez, what are all these straight people doing in Pride? Like, geez, what's going on? But the more people are out there, the more it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I'm just doing my tiny little bit. I've got my flag waving here, one of those avenues flags that we spoke about, and it's just a tiny little thing that I can do to help raise some awareness and embrace the diversity of our community.
I have to say, as someone who used to see you when I'd be at Pride events, it's so exciting. It means a lot, at least to me as a member of the queer community, to see allies out there, to see people who are, like, you know, excited about this inclusion in our community, and excited about making change. You know, your own role as an educator, I think, is part of that, right? Being able to expose people to questions, possibilities, new avenues, and reminding people that educators need education too. That, you know, that we have a role in learning, and we need to have that kind of learner's mindset about society in general.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully put, Derek.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in, George. I appreciate it. I'm going to let you go now.
Okay, great. See you guys later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, George. Good to hear from you.
So that was George calling in. If you would like to call in, you can get in touch at 705-741-4011. You're listening to Peterborough Currents, and today we're talking all about queerness in the Kawarthas.
Yeah.
My name's Aisha, and I'm joined by Derek Newman Still. I think I'd actually like to play one of the other docs that I'm working on for the podcast. Let me just grab this. And so, coming up at the Pride Parade on Saturday, yes?
Yeah.
There's also going to be, there's going to be folks marching. There's also going to be a group there called the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee, who is going to be staging a sort of protest. I met with some folks behind this committee to talk a bit about why they thought this was important and why they wanted to do this. So we're going to listen to their voices. And if you'd like to call in while this is playing, feel free. The number is 705-741-4011. And here is some committee members behind the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee. Test, test, test. Oops. Nope, that's not the one. And here we go.
Hi there. My name is Steve. I was one of the people who was at the meeting when the idea was first kind of conceptualized. So I've been involved pretty much since the beginning.
I'm Alexina. I am a member of both the Revolutionary Student Movement and the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee. I mostly just help to plan things and, yeah.
Hi, I'm Max. I'm also an organizer with both RSM and SRC, and I was approached basically as soon as SRC was finalized as an idea to help organize with it.
What's the idea behind the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee? Why did you want to start this group?
Yeah, so the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee was kind of founded on the idea that, you know, historically Pride was a protest. It was a protest initiated by a black trans woman. And we feel that the spirit of that has kind of been lost with a lot of, like, commercialization of Pride and a lot of co-opting by politicians and, basically we feel that Pride has been co-opted and the original spirit has been kind of lost, so we hope to kind of bring that back in Peterborough in our own way.
We find that a lot of companies also use Pride as an excuse to sell things.
What specifically are you protesting this year?
Well, our focus is on the police presence at Pride. Now, we are aware that there aren't going to be any uniformed officers at Pride, but one thing that we do want to focus on is that we are aware that there will be, like, correctional officers representing themselves in the Pride in the Park after the parade. And obviously we have issue with that, considering the history between the LGBT community, LGBT plus community, and the police.
Could you talk a bit about the history that you find makes this presence objectionable for you?
I believe we're all aware of the recent murders in Toronto's Gay Village and the police chief's declaration that the people were murdered solely because the community wasn't monitoring itself, which we find appalling. That's a gross statement from someone who's supposed to be protecting and serving by mandate. That's quite a lot of it. Like, people, LGBTQ people, are murdered by cops, or their murders are ignored by cops, and that's just not something we find acceptable. It's a slap in the face to have people in uniform, like, marching along, especially in Toronto Pride.
Mm-hmm. So it's this concept of the police, not necessarily the Peterborough police specifically. Is that right?
It's not like any specific police, whether it's in Toronto or Peterborough or Vancouver or anywhere in North America anyways, at the very least. They consistently have been an oppressive presence for LGBTQ2S people. And this really recent trend of the police trying to be friendly and show that they're progressive by supporting LGBTQ2S movements is really two-faced, because they'll go to a parade and march, which, I mean, in itself is a problem for a lot of people at Pride parades. They find their presence threatening and intimidating and makes it a less comfortable experience. And then they'll turn around and, as Max was saying, either end up killing, like trans people, for example, are often killed by the police or other racialized people, or just outright ignoring crimes committed against the LGBTQ2S community. So, yeah, like there's no place for them at Pride when Pride is the only place that they're willing to show solidarity.
A little note on Peterborough is that we have the highest hate crimes per capita in the country. So that's, again, not really acknowledged by cops. It's not really investigated. There was a hate crime in Del Crary Park a couple of weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, where a man was using racial slurs, and cops investigated and deemed that it wasn't a hate crime. So it's like, what? That's not welcome, I would say.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the hate crime statistics. I was actually just looking them up this morning, and there's evidence to suggest that all the, like, the majority of hate crimes in the Peterborough area are racially motivated. Could you talk a bit about, like, intersectionality at Pride and, like, how this protest, I mean, as far as I can tell, none of you are visible minorities, but how could this protest represent some of the intersectional politics of Pride?
Well, for starters, even the name Stonewall Revolutionary Committee is intended to be a reference to the Stonewall riots, which we really want to bring to the forefront, and I believe I mentioned earlier, was initiated by a black trans woman named Marsha. People tend to think of Pride as like a celebration now, but I mean, I think while there like is a lot to celebrate, in that people or LGBTQ2S people, especially racialized people in the community, have fought and died for their rights. And I think that that is unbelievably important to emphasize, and is that these rights weren't just like gifted from above. They were fought for, largely fought for by racialized people, whether they're black or indigenous or otherwise. And by having a presence of protest at Pride, we were kind of hoping to, at the very least, bring that acknowledgement to the forefront again. I guess in maybe like a buzzwordy way, like it's too early to really celebrate when, yeah.
It's not all settled yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And how are you expecting it to go down on the day of?
We are planning on marching as part of the parade, and obviously we want to make it clear that we are in no way protesting Pride itself or protesting the issue with police involvement.
As Alexina mentioned, we are going to be marching, I guess not in the parade. We do intend to demarcate ourselves from the main parade, but we will be marching, I guess, like alongside and... and then after the parade, kind of doing a rally where they're doing Pride in the Park. After the Pride, probably a few days after, we do intend to have a kind of recap meeting.
And do you want to give like a little plug for how people can get in touch if they're interested?
We have a Facebook page where you can reach out to us at the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee. Message us, come out to our recap meeting, I would suppose.
When is that happening and where?
I believe it's happening on the 25th of September at the Only Cafe.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So that was a work in progress documentary about the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee, which, as you heard, they're planning to march alongside Pride and protest police presence and the presence of correctional officers there. We are taking calls. This is Peterborough Currents. If you want to call in and share your thoughts, the number is 705-741-4011. My name's Aisha, and I'm joined by Derek Newman Still.
Hi.
Let's just talk a bit about, you know, the concept of having a protest at Pride. These folks aren't protesting Pride, but they are using the space of Pride to, you know, bring light to some issues that the queer community is trying to bring some attention to. Yeah. What do you think of using Pride as a space for, you know, politics and bringing up these kind of controversial issues?
I think it's so important, and like Pride, as I said earlier in the show, it came from protest, and it is a protest act. We're asserting our presence into a visible space and reminding people we exist, and not only do we exist, but we're not going to be silent. And so a lot of the issues around Pride that have come up have always existed, have been this notion of Pride being a party, mm-hmm. and that we shouldn't have politics and party mix. And of course, that's never really worked. It's definitely not worked for me. I feel like we, as a community, need to be protesting, need to be a presence in the community that says we want to be visible. I talked to my students about this in the Feminism and Disability Studies course, around this idea of the politics of personhood. Existing in our society is political, especially existing in a stance where our bodies are being shaped by policy and by social conversation. We need to be part of that conversation, and one of the ways that we assert that is through Pride events and through Pride parades. Mm-hmm. I've encountered some interesting reactions to this idea of Pride being about protest before, because people keep on saying, like, it's supposed to be a party, it's supposed to be about having fun. And, you know, it can be two things. Mm-hmm. We can have fun while also being in your face about things and saying, like, you know, we can be political.
Yeah, and I kind of contrast it with what we heard from Tony Tavares about Norwood Pride.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to be too visible too fast. I feel like I have a lot of thoughts swirling in my head about this kind of dichotomy. But do you think there's something to Peterborough Pride being around for so long so far that... That we can use it as a space for advancing the conversation more than just like being visible, but we can use it as a venue to talk about intercommunity issues as well?
Absolutely. I've organized a number of events for past Prides, and especially for the Pride Week, particularly reminding people that there are different ways of engaging with Pride, because one of the things I saw was a lot of the events for Peterborough Pride, much like most Prides, were based around things like dancing and social events, and that doesn't work for all of us. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to create events that are more about conversation, introducing community members, having speakers come out, having author readings that engage in questions. And I think that's one of the most powerful things we can do around Pride is ask powerful questions. Mm. Engage with this idea that our identity is something that should be, since we're treated as social questions floating around, that we have an ability to speak back, to speak up. And so I've organized a few events along those lines this year in terms of ways that we can get our voice out there, because we have sort of a lack of our voice in social presence.
Yeah. Do you want to give us a little highlight of some of the events that you're most looking forward to this week?
That would be awesome. Thank you. Sorry, I don't mean to like commercial.
No.
So I've organized a couple of events with different community members. I love collaboration, and so working with others is really important. One of the events is coming up on Monday, September 17th, from 3 till 5 at Sadler House. Jess Grover and myself are doing a queer journaling workshop, because we were talking a lot about the way that... so many sort of like when you go on Pinterest, sorry, yes, I am the kind of like, you know, older person who uses Pinterest. we were talking about how so many of the forms for different journals are so straight-oriented. Mm. They exclude our presence. They ask questions that are just othering to us, where you feel like, okay, well, what am I going to be writing about? So we're very interested in that idea of providing a space for journaling, for writing to ourselves and asking questions of ourselves. On Tuesday, from 3 till 5 at Sadler House again, because Sadler House is amazing and provides us with these wonderful spaces for queer conversations and like for conversations about pretty much anything. And, I'm doing a workshop on queer podcasting, mm-hmm. because I think it's important also to get our voices out in different ways. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of writing about queer stuff and stuff, but I also like to have multiple different formats. Not like just reading something doesn't work for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so the podcasting workshop I thought would be really important in terms of the way that we as queer folks can get our voices out, can provide that kind of space of learning and conversation for people from different aspects of society. And then on Wednesday, literally every day, I have some event going on because I love Pride so much. And I wanted to have something that wasn't just party oriented, because some of us just like to hang out and, you know, talk about stuff and do cool stuff.
And learn about things in a queer friendly space.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So Wednesday, I'm collaborating with a local comic artist, Ronnie Ritchie, uh-huh. Who does the wonderful comic GQtie, mm-hmm. GQUIT. To like for the genderqueer, etc. And they write a lot about their experiences as a genderqueer person and illustrate these experiences in the cutest style. Like their comics are just amazing. And so Ronnie and I are doing this workshop on make your own queer comics. It's geared specifically to people who haven't done comics before. We're borrowing a lot from Linda Barry's approach to comics,
oh, cool.
which is basically like, you know, when a 5-year-old gives you a crayon and says, draw with me, you draw with the kid.
Yeah.
And so for this workshop, we're literally just passing around crayons, no other writing nice. Materials, no other art materials, crayons and paper.
Oh, fun.
And getting people to kind of express things in a way that is both, you know, text and image, mm-hmm. and the kind of interplay between those, because sometimes you can't express something in words. Sometimes you need to be just like, here is this beautiful crayon monster that expresses, you know, how I feel about homophobia, mm-hmm. and you know, here is the, you know, the transphobic you know, Dracula that sucks away at our life.
Right.
Sorry, I'm using monsters because I've got monsters on the brain because Halloween's coming up.
Right. So those events are coming up this week at Sadler House.
At Sadler House, yeah. We've got another one on Thursday during our regular time period for the queer writing group, which happens at Sadler House every other Thursday, fortnightly, because I love to use that word.
Yeah.
This one in particular, I'm going to be running a workshop called Writing Queer Fairy Tales. Mm. Normally for our writing workshop, it's more conversational and kind of share what you want. But a lot of people were asking about this workshop because I gave the workshop at Camp Firefly.
Right.
This summer, which was a queer camp for kids, and it went really well, and people have been really fascinated with the possibility of doing this, and so I thought it'd be fun for Pride. So if you want to queer up some fairy tales and you want to write about some, you know, princess, prince, you know, witch, whatever, like, you know, prince to princess, we love this stuff. We're looking for those Cinderfella tales of transformation and magic. And then on Friday, this is one of the events that's not at Sadler House. Trail College has agreed to host us and provided us with some funding for a panel on access, mm-hmm. That we're calling Queering Disability and Disabling Queerness. And we're going to have a number of community members out there. We have a student representation from Trent in the form of Shannon Avery. And then we have some queer novelists like Fiona Patton and a publisher of queer works, as well as author Nathan Frechette. And then we're bringing Ronnie Ritchie back as well to talk about kind of like, you know, queerness and disability in comics, because they've done a number of works talking about ADHD in comics.
Oh, cool.
And negotiating their own sort of identity as someone who is disabled as well as trans. And so experimenting with that pollination there.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds like a great spot to learn more about what we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
about the intersection of disability and queerness. Thanks for those. Those sound great.
Thank you. I'm really excited about them, and I can't wait to see who comes out to them and get a chance to chat with some people that, you know, that are all about mutual learning and mm-hmm. learning together.
Totally. I'll just take a break from talking about events. I think we've got a caller on the line.
Valentina, sorry.
Valentina, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello.
Did I say your name right, Valentina?
Valentina, yes.
Yeah. So you had some reflections about the kind of the conversation that was playing earlier about the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee?
I did, yeah. Well, first off, I want to say thank you both for the great conversation that's taking place. I'm really enjoying listening to it and learning a lot, so it's so fantastic to be experiencing this. And also really appreciative that you're that you allowed the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee to share what they're doing. As someone who has been out and queer for, I guess, almost 20 years now, I would say, I'm so pleased to see some focus being brought back to protest aspect. And it takes a lot of courage. So I also want to say thank you to all those people, and they sound like some young people are involved as well, mm-hmm. that are doing that. And I think it is important to have both aspects. And of course, as you've mentioned several times, Pride did originate from protest. And it's the courage involved right now is a lot, like I just said, because I find that there's a lot of pressure now that there is a certain level of acceptance that's come to kind of go with the flow, to accept it, to focus on the positivity, if you will, now that certain people have achieved acceptance and mainstream mm-hmm. acceptance. And it really erases the people who have not yet benefited or are still facing a lot of challenges. It's just really great to see. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Yeah, so you mentioned you've been out for 20 years, is that right?
I give away my age here, but yeah, I came out when I was 11, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, go ahead, Karen.
I was just thinking about how that ties in so nicely with our conversation with George as well, around the importance of youth getting access to identities and being able to be like, I know the name for what I am now.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
Just going to ask, like, when you were 11, like, how did you, you know, kind of gather this awareness of being in the queer community, and how did that identity develop?
Well, it's a great question, and it's interesting because for me, it's something that I knew from as long as I can remember. As long as I can remember having an awareness of, you know, not obviously at a very young age, like 5 or 6, you're, like you said, queerness is not just about sex. Mm. You're
Absolutely.
Not thinking about sex necessarily at that age, but you know you're different. You know, for me, it was very apparent. I know that there are many people who come to this later in life, and I went to Catholic school at that age, so it was obviously not something I had language for as young as that. But then, one thing that was very helpful for me is my older siblings had some friends who were queer, and having that exposure really helped me to understand what it was that I was experiencing and what my own identity was. And, of course, that has been fluid, and I've found better terms as I've gotten older. There are some terms that I used to identify with that I no longer feel are the most appropriate for me. Mm-hmm. So it's been this constant process of growing and learning and evolving, and I think that's such a wonderful thing. And I think that all humans should do that, and more we can embrace that in everybody. It's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely challenges with coming out at a young age, a lot of invalidation that can come with it as well, but also a lot of liberation because I was able to sort some things out pretty early on and get a lot of the suffering out of the way early.
So you started identifying as part of the queer community, various labels over the years, but was there a process of like coming out? Like, when did you start telling folks?
Yes. So I yes, that's right. So I identified very early on, and I came out officially the first time to the first person, my brother, actually, when I was 11 years old.
That's amazing.
and he was 7 years older than me, but still is 7 years older than me. And so, yeah, my older brother, I really trusted him, had a good relationship with him, and he was fantastic.
That's incredible.
The reason I came out was not as nice. It started becoming apparent at school at that age. And so I... you know, there was a bullying situation and things where they had to get our parents involved, and I experienced a lot of discrimination. Like I mentioned, growing up in a Catholic school wasn't the most safe environment to be going through that. So I knew that it was a matter of time before my family found out. And I started really thinking that I, you know, well, getting scared, first of all, and really... realizing that I needed allies, and I needed to bring people in, and I needed to start with the people who loved me the most and hope that they would love me regardless.
How did that go when you told your parents?
I told my brother first. He supported me. He helped me make a strategy to eventually tell my mom a few months later. My parents were divorced at the time, so I didn't actually tell my father till several years later. But my mom, it was, you know, she had a strong Catholic upbringing as well, but had done a lot of work on herself, both with expanding her views and her spiritual understanding of the world. So for her, it was, I think, a bit surprising and not. And she I think was the most wonderful thing I could have asked for. She told me the first thing that she loved me no matter what. There was, of course, a questioning of, could this be a phase? Are you sure? Especially at that young age, and kind of explaining to me that things can change as you age. But then after that, it was okay. If this is you, I support you no matter what. Your family loves you, and anyone who has a problem with it, it's their problem, not ours.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
What did it mean for you, like, when you were kind of planning the strategy with your brother, knowing that your mom had done some work on herself to expand her kind of spiritual beliefs? How did that inform, like, going into the conversation? What did that help?
Absolutely. It helped a lot, because that's something that had been reinforced in me and my siblings as well growing up. Even though we grew up in that Catholic context, there was this broader understanding of there are potentially many truths. There are many ways to exist. And there, you know, the first thing is to love others and treat others in, to use that Catholic context, the way that you would want to be treated. So that helped. And my brother also had a big focus on spirituality, so it helped. It created that kind of reassurance in the background that even if it takes a while for these people to process, I expect that they will get there to that place of acceptance because that's aligned with their beliefs.
It's such a powerful narrative to share as well. I really want to thank you for sharing it here on the show, because we've been talking a lot about this idea of, first of all, that coming out is a process, that it happens in stages, right? And that we're always coming out. But also about the importance of sharing queer stories, sharing our history, sharing our experiences, creating community through words and through... I'm sorry, I shouldn't just limit to words, but through art, through expression. And it's really important for our stories to get out there. I'm really glad that you tuned in and were willing to share this with us, because it's a really powerful story.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I wasn't expecting it to go there, but I'm happy that it did. So
thank you. thank you for your openness and, you know, being vulnerable about it. So.
Are you going to make it out to any of the Pride events? Are you excited about Pride here?
Yeah, I'm really hoping to. So hopefully this will be my first Pride in Peterborough.
Ooh, exciting.
So I moved here 3 years ago, and I haven't been able to make it out yet, usually just due to scheduling conflicts.
Yeah.
But I really hope to attend, at the very least, the parade.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Well, go ahead.
No, you go.
It's such a cute parade, too. Like, I remember being so excited when... many other prides have a whole section that is often, that refers to itself as Dykes on Bikes.
Mm.
And it's sort of like a group of lesbian women who have decided to, like, ride motorcycles in Pride.
Yeah.
and make noise and make a difference.
Uh-huh.
And a few years ago, we got our first Dyke on Bike, and I was like, yes!
A single Dyke on Bike, yeah.
And it is so cute. I got so excited. I went up to the person and was like, I'm so glad that you're here, because I love this part of Pride. And I was like, so how long have you been in Peterborough? And they said to me, I'm from Toronto. But there's something cute and quaint about that too, like the way that we have that nice intermix of people.
Mm.
Rather than separations in our parades.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of beautiful intermixing, and just the level of excitement is so huge that it's like, I get to do something in Peterborough.
Yeah, I don't know, the whole conversation today has really made me feel like it's so important to be out and, you know, visible in your own local community, however you feel comfortable doing that. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna let you go now, Valentina, but thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you very much. Valentina, your story really matters, and it's fabulous that you felt comfortable sharing it, so thank you so much.
Thank you both. Take care.
Bye-bye. So we've gone quite a bit over time, but...
sorry. We got chatting.
Yeah, we did. This has been a great conversation. And we're going to... Peterborough Currents is going to keep having these kind of phone-in conversations throughout the Trent Radio season every Sunday until sometime in December. We're going to be on the air 10 till 11:30 or 11 or whenever. Next week, we're going to keep talking about Pride and queerness in the Kawarthas. And so if you didn't get a chance to call in today and would like to have your voice on the air and share your story next week, please call in again. And our email is peterboroughcurrents@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook, checking all those messages, and however you feel comfortable getting in touch, or even just with feedback for the show. We'd love to hear from you. Let me do the... credits for the show.
Just before you roll credits,
yeah.
I just want to thank you so much for providing the space for conversations.
Oh,
and
my pleasure.
And for inviting me here. I've really enjoyed our chat, so it's much appreciated.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This, like, you've been so generous with your time and with your knowledge and expertise. This has been really wonderful.
I love it. I love the, like, learning so much just through chatting with you, and it's been really delightful, and hearing the voices of our community members who have called in.
Mm-hmm.
Valentina and George, to be able to get a sense of, you know, people want to talk about stuff, so
yeah.
And we need to have those forums for chatting.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to have these kinds of conversations that, I don't know, like, I feel like I connect to the community so much more by hearing from folks and
yeah.
Understanding where they're coming from, and it's really cool that people can be so open about their experiences.
And it's just so great to actually, I find often in terms of my own experiences of the world, I relate most through the world through stories.
Mm.
And so hearing people talk about their experiences gives me a sense of being part of this world. Because, you know, in terms of like our ideas of belonging in our society, we're often told that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's through those stories that we share that, at least for me, I feel a sense of belonging. I feel like, you know, this is, we have a dialogue here. We have a conversation.
Yeah.
And we connect together. So
mm-hmm.
It's really amazing to hear from other stories and get a chance to tell our own stories too.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time. This has been really great.
Thank you.
I have little credits music. Let's see if it'll play. So that's it for the show. And, as I mentioned, we're going to be live on Sunday mornings for the rest of the Trent Radio season. So tune in again next week. We'll be here same time, same place, 10 to 11:30-ish, live on Trent Radio. Many thanks to John Whalen for the music in this episode. You can find his work online at John Whalen. That's johnwhelan.bandcamp.com. Huge thanks to Jeff Moore for being a technician and call screener and receptionist. Thanks so much.
And tech help.
And yeah, tech help.
Which is important because I've had trouble with on my shows with tech. So thank you.
Getting the phones working is no simple feat at Trent Radio. I also want to give a shout out to my absentee co-host, Will Pearson. I hope you come back soon. Thanks to Derek Newman Still for being so generous, and as well as thank you to the other folks who spoke to me for the docs that were in this show, Tony Tavares and the folks from the Stonewall Revolutionary Committee, Max, Alexana, and Steve. And thanks to the people who called in, George and Valentina. It was really, really wonderful to hear your thoughts. You can subscribe to Peterborough Currents as a podcast. We've got a bunch of great stuff, stories about Peterborough and the area up there already, and there's more on the way. You can find a handy guide for how to subscribe on our website, peterboroughcurrents.ptbopodcasters.ca. And until next time, I'm Esha Barania. Talk to you later.